Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello and welcome to the Curzon Film Podcast. This week, we're getting festive as we preview the 62nd London Film Festival, which will be taking place from the 10th of October to the 21st of October, featuring over 200 films from over 70 countries across 14 cinemas in London and one in Manchester. We'll also be hearing from two of the festival's programmers, Kate Taylor and Michael Blythe. I'm Sam Howlett, and joining me this week are Kelly Powell.
Hello.
Ryan Hewitt.
Hello.
And Stephen Ryder.
Hello.
So before we talk about some of the films that we're looking forward to seeing at the London Film Festival, let's hear from the people that have put it together. Stephen, do you want to introduce this one, as you were the ones that spoke to
Yeah, I spoke to Kate Taylor and Michael Blythe, who are both two of the lead programmers at the festival, along with Trisha Tuttle. Michael focuses on the court strand, and Kate kind of oversees a lot of other things. They were both absolute pleasure to talk to. There is a bit of an audio change halfway through because of technical reasons, but and there's a bit of a jump to us talking about Widows kind of in media res, but it's a great conversation. Yeah.
Okay, so here is Stephen talking to Kate Taylor and Michael Blythe.
So I'm here with Kate Taylor and Michael Blythe from the BFI Festival Programming Team. Thank you very much for joining us today, guys.
Thank you for having us.
And I know it must be a very busy time for you at the moment with the festival just coming up. And how do you guys kind of feel at this point in the festival? Is it a nervous kind of excitement, or do you feel like most of the hard work's been and gone?
Bit of both, I would say. I think there's definitely a kind of nervous excitement. I think everyone's at that point now. We just want the festival to get underway.
Yes.
We just want to be there. We want to be sharing the films. We want to be meeting the filmmakers. Mm-hmm. You know, we want it all to happen, but there's still a fair way to go before that. Mm-hmm. That takes place.
Yeah.
We simultaneously want it to be right now and maybe have another month.
2 months.
2 months,
yeah.
Would be good.
Yeah. I guess once it's rolling, it's kind of like, and you're in the middle of it, you could just got to kind of swim with it, see where it takes you. Yeah.
Absolutely. You spend about 9 months keeping lots and lots of secrets, and then once they're out in the world, it is an exciting time now because people are discussing the films. Uh-huh. And it's kind of like, yeah, you've set it all in motion, and then the audience can decide.
Well, that's kind of what I wanted to ask, like, in terms of programming. I was going to ask how you guys kind of see your role. Do you see it as a matter of, you know, good taste, and that's what a programmer needs, or do you see it as a matter of knowing your audience and knowing what the London Film Festival audience needs?
I think it's absolutely a combination, but you know, London is a hugely metropolitan city. It's a really cine literate city. Mm-hmm. It's a place where you've got different appetites to satisfy. So obviously when you see a film and you become very passionate about it, that's partly to do with taste, but you also have to be very aware of the limits of your own taste. Mm-hmm. And your personal biases and maybe your personal prejudices, if there are certain types of cinema that you know that excites you and some that you don't connect to so much. So that's why it's a really large programming team. So it's not just the decision of you know, one person if a film is in. Basically, when we see a film that we like, it's then referred to another person. So there's always at least two people who've seen the film so that we can then discuss and really argue the case for why a film's there. Because you don't want any film to be in the festival that you don't have someone who feels strongly that it has a place to be there.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And when you say kind of argue, are these discussions that you guys have in the rooms at the BFI kind of heated? Do they get kind of, or are they very diplomatic?
They're not heated. we're passionate. I mean, for me, and I think for, for a lot of most programmers, you know, it's the selection process is the most exciting time.
Oh, absolutely.
It's the time talking about these films, arguing about these films, you know, saying why you think this film has a place in the festival is so exciting, and it forces you to question your own taste as well. And I think that's a really important process.
Yeah.
Constantly having to think about why you're responding to something, and then kind of feeding and bouncing off other people and seeing if that's something they respond to too. And like Kate said, I think ultimately, you know, it can be a challenging thing to separate your own tastes and kind of think from audience perspectives, but I think it's a balance of the two. I think, you know, people want to see the personality of the programmers coming through as well.
Absolutely.
So, you know, it's definitely a fine balance, but a very fun one.
Yeah, that's really nice to hear. It's really nice to hear, because I guess you grow up as a film lover, kind of watching these films and wishing you kind of had a whole group of people to discuss them with. And you guys are kind of now living that dream and kind of being able to then recommend these films to people. It's one of the reasons I'm so interested in curation, is because it's basically you getting to recommend these brilliant films to your friends. But obviously you guys are doing it on this big scale, where you're also getting to work with filmmakers and get important work, I think, seen by audiences. And it's really great, I think, how the festival kind of champions that.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the great things about when the festival itself kicks off, is seeing how audiences respond to these films. And when people come up to you and they talk to you about the films, whether they loved them, whether they hated them, it's always so stimulating to then get this next layer of feedback, this next layer of conversation. So talking about these films never stops.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, it's not like we program the films and then that's the end of our job. It continues, and you know, people respond very passionately, very excitedly, very angrily sometimes to films. And you know, it's fascinating to have these conversations.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Kate, you come from a short film background, from the London Short Film Festival. You actually kind of started that off here in London.
Indeed, yeah.
Do you, moving to kind of feature films, do you think there's challenges moving from short films to kind of programming feature films?
Well, there's different things in terms of the industry around short films and features. When you're programming shorts, you often have a very direct relationship with the filmmakers, because they don't have a huge commercial life. So there aren't that many kind of distributors. Mm-hmm. It's much more focused on people trying stuff out, kind of new talent kind of coming through. And obviously at the festival, we still have kind of lots of short film programs and a short film competition, which we introduced, I think, 4 years ago.
Yes,
now.
Yes, I remember.
But with features, I suppose the main difference is that you're working very much, the festival is part of an ecology. And we're aware of wanting to support obviously British talent, mm-hmm. On an industrial level, as well as obviously we want to champion the artistic merits of the work, but we also are very keen for films to get distribution and to be seen by people who might buy them and take them on to cinemas and to kind of to other festivals.
Yeah.
And to play internationally. And that's true of the British films. And also, I mean, when we start the festival, actually when we finish the program, it's normally about 60% of the films that don't have any distribution at all. So we're very aware that a lot of these films, this will be their first chance. You hope they'll get more, but to be seen by audiences in the UK. So that's quite a big responsibility, to make sure that you're kind of representing as many countries as possible, as many different types of cinema, and giving those films of different scales an opportunity to be seen by people who might connect with them.
So, we were just, talking about Widows, and you were saying that the it harkens a lot back to the old television show, the Linda LaPlante television show.
Well, I think it's inspired. I think it's inspired by, but it's obviously a totally different beast in terms of it's incredibly contemporary. And I think that the some of the pleasures from that show are there. It's a really cracking script, this time from Gillian Flynn, who did Gone Girl. But this one, it's full of the twists and turns and kind of the genre thrills, the kind of the heist moments, but it's also got something really really exciting and complex in terms of how it teases out class conflict and racial conflict. And the story is four women whose husbands were all bank robbers. Viola Davis playing the lead, and her husband was Liam Neeson. And at the very beginning of the film, there's a big heist that goes wrong, and whilst all the husbands perish, the women then have to band together, and they've never really met each other before, and to take on a kind of one last big job that Liam Neeson's character has left the plans for. So yeah, as you say, it's a really cracking cast, but there's also a lot going on beneath the surface, as well as some kind of pulpy thrills.
This is something new from Steve McQueen then, which sounds really great. No, I can't wait for that. It's going to be a good one. And Peterloo as well is something that I find very interesting with this year's festival, because obviously you've got a screening of it outside of London. I think it's going to be the first ever London Film Festival premiere outside of London. Can you talk about some of the kind of motivations behind that?
Absolutely. So Peterloo is the story of the Peterloo Massacre, which is something which strangely hasn't been really captured in feature films before, and is, you know, such an integral part of like Manchester history. We were really delighted to be screening it at home in Manchester, where it's which isn't a million miles away from Peter's Fields, where the event took place. This one felt important to us as well, because it's a real, to some extent, it's like a summation of a lot of Mike Leigh's themes and interests, things to do with kind of class consciousness. There's a real kind of humanism there, and there's also there's a strong theme of rhetoric and how people become politicized, and how their suppression gets articulated, and what that does to you, like how that politicizes people into action. Actually, activism is quite a strong theme across the program, but in this, there's this great sense of a kind of big patchwork ensemble of people's lives, working class lives, families who are just trying to get along, finding themselves suppressed, and it just felt very important that we were able to, I don't know, to screen it where it happened, but also at the same time it's screening nationally at the same time. So that first screening is going to be across the UK, live cast into cinemas.
That's absolutely fantastic. And I think it's going to be great for something like Peterloo, especially. It seems the perfect film to kind of take outside of London and show to the rest of the country. And it seems to be part of this spate of films at the moment that are looking back at the past politically in order to say something about the present. Mm. And I think there could be no other director kind of better than Mike Leigh to kind of move forward with that. And also coming out of some of the other festivals early this year, you've got The Favourite playing as well, the new Yorgos Lanthimos film. It's getting a lot of buzz for kind of the end of year awards season as well, which is, I'm sure it'll pop up and a few names will pop up in the acting categories and whatnot. Are you looking forward to that one, Michael?
Very much. It's a real favourite among the team. no pun intended. It's so exciting. I mean, we've screened Yorgos Lanthimos's previous films at the festival, and it's so great to have him back. And, you know, this is something which feels very much him, but also feels like a very different side of him, a very different version of him. It's absolutely cracking, hilarious, witty, a little bit nasty. It's got everything, and the leads are extraordinary. Olivia Colman in particular is genuinely a revelation as Queen Anne, and I think it's will definitely be one of the most enjoyable screenings at the festival. Its screenings are American Express Gala this year, and it's just so exciting to have it in such a prominent place in the programme.
I remember being at the premiere for Killing of a Sacred Deer last year and seeing Emma Stone turn up for that. I think she'd been invited by Yorgos, and during the opening scene she had her hands over her face and couldn't watch it, and I was thinking to myself,
and you're going to make a film with this guy. But it's still got that nastiness, which is great to hear. So I thought it'd be a good opportunity for you guys as well. There's obviously been some late additions to the programme that I know you'd love to talk about, and for you to champion some of your kind of favourites that you think are really going to hit home to an audience here in London this year. Kate, I don't know if you want to start.
Sure, okay. Well, one film that I'm excited by is Five Men and a Caravaggio. So this is a world premiering at the festival. It's by Chinese-British director Zhao Lu Guo. And she's a novelist and has written several kind of amazing memoirs, as well as a filmmaker of kind of documentary and fiction. And this, the five men of the title are basically four blokes who live in Hackney, who are all kind of creative people. There's a poet, a writer, a philosopher, and a photographer. And they're all people who've made London their home but have come from other countries. And the film takes place just after the Brexit referendum. And one of them, the poet, on his birthday, he's seen a recent Caravaggio exhibition that he's really kind of connected to. So he commissions a artist in China to make an exact replica. And so then we kind of travel to China and also see this guy who's around the same age as these men. And he literally does these kind of versions of paintings using his iPhone as a reference. And it's kind of in his tiny little kitchen. And there's lots in there that's kind of about, you know, art in a digital age, lots of kind of Walter Benjamin stuff, but also loads of very exciting questioning of what's happening in the UK now, what the politics are around migration, what it means to call somewhere home when you suddenly feel like you're not wanted there. And she also teases something out of all of these kind of middle-aged men and their creativity that I think it takes. There's just something very subtle in how you never see her on screen, you never hear her asking the questions, but it becomes quite funny and warm, and it's not taking the piss out of these men at all, but there's something really quite wonderful about, middle-aged blokes on screen, which isn't necessarily always the case. So this was pretty cool.
No, that sounds great, actually. Yeah, you've certainly convinced me to see it. And it sounds kind of, what strand is that playing in? Sorry, Five Men in a Caravaggio.
In Create.
Okay, very cool. And Michael, is there anything that you'd like to bring up?
Sure. I mean, it's always one of the hardest things when someone asks you for, you know, a favour or recommendations. But a film that I know me and Kate saw together, and we both really fell in love with it, was a film called Only You, which is in our first feature competition. And it's the debut film from a filmmaker called Harry Woodliffe, and she's made a film about a young couple who meet and fall in love, and then, you know, their kind of budding romance faces some challenges when they decide to embark on making family together. It's a really beautifully observed, really intimate and really smart and insightful film, and it's got these incredible performances at the centre from Leia Costa and Josh O'Connor, who are both absolutely incredible, magnetic in these roles. And I think a lot of people will remember Josh O'Connor from God's Own Country, in which it's a very, he's a very quiet role, very kind of moody role. And this is the complete opposite. He's really energetic and is such a kind of presence on the screen. And I think it really shows him as one of the most kind of versatile actors that we have working today. So that's a film that I really love.
No, great stuff. I thought God's Own Country was fantastic, and he seems to inhabit that role so much in that film, you almost can't see him as anything else. Mm-hmm. So it sounds kind of fascinating to be moving on to a film such as this one now. So obviously, Michael, you're in charge of the cult strand. Is there anything in that as well that you'd like to point out, or anything in regards to the late editions we were talking about earlier?
Yeah, absolutely. One of the late editions has gone into cult, which is Dragged Across Concrete. You mentioned S. Craig Zahler earlier, whose two previous films we've screened before, Bone Tomahawk and Brawl in Cell Block 99. And this is very much an extension of his work. You know, he makes these quite epic genre pieces, very kind of deliberately paced, very slow, very thoughtful, but also with these kind of, punctuated by these moments of extreme, brutal violence. And this is very much the same thing. And it stars Vince Vaughn and Mel Gibson as two corrupt cops doing
you know, a few bad things.
Corrupt things.
Exactly, yeah. A few corrupt things. Again, I think it just showcases, as Craig Zahler, it's one of the most interesting filmmakers working in genre today. He consistently upends expectations. He never goes where you think he's going to go. And he always manages to shock, which for me is really impressive because I often pride myself as being unshockable when it comes to violence on film. But, you know, there's a couple of moments in this where I might have briefly looked away.
Oh, wow. Okay. Quite the revelation. And Kate, is there anything that you would like to talk about as well in regards to kind of favourites in the programme or late additions?
Well, I think there are a few films playing at Curzon that I could maybe just highlight, playing at either Mayfair or Curzon Soho. And one I think the audiences will really dig is Keep Going. So this is a film by Joachim Le Fosse, who's a Belgian filmmaker. He had a film called After Love in, was it last year? It was in 2016 in the programme. And this is a story of a mother and her estranged son who have gone on this trip across Kyrgyzstan on horseback, kind of to rekindle their relationship. And the mother is played by Virginie Efira, who I think is a super interesting French actress, who's also in An Impossible Love, the Catherine Corsini film in the festival. And I feel she's really an actress that the audiences are starting to respond to. And the son is played by Casey Mottet-Klein, who people might know from Ursula Mayer's films, the Swiss director, who's also, in fact, he's in a film, Shockwaves, Diary of My Mind, yeah, which is also in the festival. So you've got these two kind of actors kind of at their peak, and the relationship between the two kind of is teased out over this journey across some of the most beautiful landscape that you'll see in the festival. It's playing as part of our journey strand, and it's one where you really feel a sense of pleasure in landscape and a sense of also a sense of foreboding and the place becoming character. And it's just incredibly emotionally astute and the type of satisfying art house cinema that you sometimes just want it.
And I feel like we've talked about, you know, like satisfying astute art house and brutal mm-hmm. violence. And just another one just to mention, if people wanted something a little bit more lighthearted, fancied some laughs, The Breaker Operas is one to highlight. It's a New Zealand comedy from two female directors. And it's about a kind of alternative dating agency who people hire to help them break up with their partners rather than to find love. And it's a real, real blast. I think it's one of those hugely, you know, it's super inventive, it's super funny, it's super smart and super subversive, shot and made by a predominantly female crew. And I think it's one that audiences are going to go crazy for. Mm-hmm. We've added an additional screening of that one because it sold out so quickly when the tickets went on sale. And we just thought we want to give more opportunities for people to see this one, so we had to put in an extra screening.
That's really great to hear. Any kind of additional screenings at a festival is a really good sign. There was one film that I'm very, very excited about that I don't know if either of you have actually seen, but it's Mariano Yilmaz's La Flor. So I'm a huge fan of Extraordinary Stories, which came out 10 years ago now, and he's been working on this film since. And obviously it must have been a bit of a difficult thing for you guys to program because it's 13 hours long. It's in 14, sorry, I'm underselling it. 14 hours long, it's in three parts, and it's by a director that really likes to mess with narrative. Have you both seen it, and will you both be seeing it, and what do you think of it?
Well, there won't be an opportunity for us to see it on the big screen, alas, during the festival, because we'll be kind of Q&A-ing and working across the festival. But I absolutely recommend it. He's a fascinating director that's somewhere between, like, Miguel Gomez, I think, is a reference point for someone who's playing with form. And, I mean, in La Flor, you start off with a bench under a tree, and he sits there and draws you a diagram of what the film is going to be and the different... it's basically composed of six different stories, and the first four stories have a beginning and a middle. The fifth story, I think, maybe has a beginning, middle, and an end. And then the final story has a middle and an end, but no beginning, or something like that. And he draws this beautiful diagram, which is the diagram of the flower.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Thanks then to Kate Taylor and Michael Blythe for coming on the show. We actually had Kate Taylor on last year as well, so this is a nice recurring guest we've got going on. Stephen, do you want to kick us off with some of the films you're looking forward to seeing at this year's London Film Festival?
I like the way you introduced it as the 60-second London Film Festival. It made me think like it was 60 seconds long. I was like, we're doing a whole podcast on a minute-long film festival? the film that I'm probably most excited about that I've been... that's been on my radar for a while. And weirdly, the three films that I have brought up here, I've just noticed, are all directed by women as well, which is great for a festival, I think, that is pushing for kind of a more gender-neutral kind of thing. I think 38% of the festival's films this year are directed by women, which is fantastic. But the one I'm looking forward to is called Madeline's Madeline. It's by a director called Josephine Decker, who I've only seen one of her other films, Thou Wast Mild and Lovely. And I guess she can be described as a bit like a genre or horror-based kind of Terrence Malick, which is really interesting to me. Because I love Terrence Malick's style, but often think that he can get a bit lost with his narratives when he's not as focused as he should be. So Madeline's Madeline is about a young girl who meets a experimental art theatre leader, and they, as they get to know each other, it turns out the young girl has quite a lot of mental health issues, and the experimental art theatre leader kind of appropriates her mind and her talents for her own kind of gain to put on this show. The film's been described as a kind of a jazz-infused fever dream, which is something that I think sounds really exciting. Yeah. And the way she shoots is very kind of... The editing is very choppy. She does a lot of kind of shots from the back of people's heads and follows them through, a lot of point-of-view shots. And I think it's just going to be, if not narratively, a very exciting visual kind of film. So I'm really excited for that one.
Josephine's, her films are quite hard to see in the UK, aren't they?
They are,
like Butter on the Latch and...
Yes, they are. You mentioned. Butter of the Latch I haven't seen, but I hear it's excellent, actually. Yeah. And more of a horror film than Thou Wast Mild and Lovely. But I managed to find them online, and I genuinely think they're worth checking out. They're quite short as well. They're only around kind of 80 minutes or 70 minutes, so they're well worth checking out for people before they come to the festival and see Madeline's Madeline.
This does seem like it could be the breakout...
I really hope so. I hear the lead performance of Helena Howard, who's the young girl that kind of Josephine Decker apparently saw on stage somewhere and thought, I have to make a film around this girl, and that's how the film was born. Apparently, Helena Howard's performance is absolutely incredible for a kind of a newcomer to the film scene. So that's worth looking out for if you're interested in performances as well, I think. So the other film I'm really excited about is a film called Touch Me Not, which won the Golden Bear at the Berlin Film Festival, which seems like a long, long time ago now. But this is a film by a Romanian film directed by Adina Pintaili. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. I'm sure I'm not.
Adele Dazin.
Not Adele Dazin. No. but this is a kind of docu... I've tried to stay away from as much of the plot as I can for this one because I think it seems like a really enigmatic and mysterious film. But it's kind of a docu-fiction. It's been described as an eye-opening look at human sexuality about a woman who kind of places a camera down and then, I think, interviews people about, like, intimacy and sex. But the people that she interviews are kind of people on the fringes, people with kind of disfigurements or disabilities. It's had a lot of negative reviews and a lot of positive ones. So that's something that kind of intrigues me as a film that might be really divisive at the festival. I think it's very explicit. I think it's got a kind of a relationship with the audience that it wants to kind of nurture or kind of push people away. And I think it's going to be a really exciting and talked about film at the festival. I'm really glad they've got it, actually, because I thought I was worried it might kind of disappear after winning its Golden Bear, as a lot of kind of films from Berlin do sometimes. So I'm super happy that that London have managed to kind of snag it, which is great. So yeah, really exciting to see that in the programme. And the last film is a film called Out of Blue, which is probably the most mainstream film on here. It's by a director called Carol Morley, which some of you might have heard before.
The Falling
and Dreams of a Life. The Falling, I thought, was a really undervalued film from a few years ago. It's got Maisie Williams in it and a really early turn. I think it was her first role for Florence Pugh, who was incredible in it. And you could kind of see at the time that she was going to be big. The Falling was just a really dreamy evocation from, it was like a girls' school narrative about all these girls who were going through like mass fainting spells, and it had a really unique atmosphere to it. And I think Out of Blue, I don't know much about the plot, but it does have Patricia Clarkson in it, who I love. I think she's a fantastic actress. Yes. And to see Patricia and Carol kind of working together in a kind of subversive noir film that's apparently about existential angst. I can really get down with that. I think it seems really, really interesting, and it's one of the Gala Strand films as well. So I think they're really pushing Carol Morley as a strong British talent.
I look forward to seeing that one. Ryan, do you want to give us some of your?
So one of the films that I'm very much looking forward to is called Ray and Liz, which is the first fiction feature film by the photographer Richard Billingham. It's loosely, well, as I understand it, loosely based on his collection called Raise a Laugh, which is covers his life in the West Midlands growing up as a young boy with working class family, and specifically with an alcoholic father. It's definitely going to be the kind of raw kitchen sink. Think Ken Loach at his most bleak, perhaps, but I've no doubt that it will have vibrancy and a certain kind of eye that only a photographer like Richard Billingham could bring to that sort of otherwise quite tough subject matter. It just seems like right up my street, to be perfectly honest.
I've heard it's excellent.
Lots of really good word about it so far.
I struggle with kitchen sink drama sometimes, but I'm actually like really intrigued by that one.
Yeah. I think it's always a bit of it can be a bit hit and miss when a photographer, an artist, turns their hand to making a film for the first time, but there's something so keen about his eye in his photography that, and this being such a personal story, I've got high hopes for this one. Okay. I really do.
Yeah, sounds good. Kelly, do you want to?
One of the movies that I'm really looking forward to is called Burning by Lee Chang Dong. I'm very interested to see this kind of mysterious drama unfold in a setting that I don't think we get to see very often, you know, near the border of North and South Korea. It was a South Korean film. And it got really good reviews at Cannes. Didn't it win?
No, Shoplifters won. Burning was the favourite.
Anyway, so I'm just very happy that I get a chance to see it here. I'm looking forward to that very much.
Yeah, it's based on a Murakami
short story.
And historically, I think Murakami's been quite difficult to adapt.
Because
of his kind of details and very extended kind of descriptions of things.
Yeah, well, it's loosely, I think people have said that it's more of like a jumping off point, like an inspiration. Even though it is sort of based on the short story, I think he takes, I think, a few characters and a tonal sort of vibe from that short story and goes with that.
That's cool.
Yeah, it's just very intriguing. And another one that I'm really, really looking forward to is Paul Dano's debut feature, Wildlife. I think Carey Mulligan looks like she's going to kill in this film. And I'm just so intrigued when actors turn direct, and he's so young as well, you know. Such a good actor, such a keen eye for character, and I think it's gonna be a good one. Can't wait for that.
Wow. I think it's really tough for a first-time director doing a period piece film as well. So that's going to be fascinating to see how he handles that, you know. But I think all the cast and talent are in town for that one too, which should be really good fun.
Yeah, it's co-written with his partner, Elia Kazan, isn't it?
Elia Kazan.
Elia.
Elia.
Wow. His
no,
daughter.
No, not like that. Zoe Kazan.
The On the Water production. Ostracised from Hollywood by his peers.
She's still working today, though. And married Paul Dano.
Yeah, Paul Dano's Zoe a lucky
Kazan.
Boy.
Yes, Zoe Kazan. Yes. She's also in a film... that I'm looking forward to very much. That's my third one. The Ballad of Buster Scruggs.
Oh, yeah.
Of course. Man, the Coens are just my favourite. I can't wait. I cannot wait for this one.
They're both in town as well.
They're both in town. So maybe we'll get a glimpse of them. Yeah. Notoriously elusive, though. But, that one, I think it was conceptualized as a TV series. And it's interesting to see. They were like, nah, let's make it a feature. Yeah. And that often goes the other way around these days, you know. Directors and writers are like, no, I just couldn't do it in one feature film, and I wanted to make it a TV
so
series.
It's nice
and
this to
is
do
like
the, other way,
the
yeah.
opposite way around, and they're very, you know, I just love them. I love all the choices they make and all the actors they choose. Like their characters are amazing, and that one is on the top of my list, I think.
It looks like they're sticking with their kind of zany sketch comedy Hail Caesar mode.
Yeah.
With this one.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Screwball stuff.
Yeah. Sometimes they do like, a comedy one and then a serious one. Yeah. But this time they're
sticking
with...
But it's another genre film. Yeah. I just love their take on, you know, the American West.
Yeah.
They've just got such a unique sense of humour and critical eye when it comes to sort of American mythology.
Yeah.
So I can't wait to check that one out.
Anthology films are always a bit of a mixed bag, usually.
Yeah,
I mean, I'm a huge fan of them because I love seeing them come together.
Mm. Yeah.
But
to see the Coens do one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm always hesitant, but excited, I think.
Mm. Yeah. I think the thing is that there's always one that doesn't work.
Yeah.
And then you immediately think, well, I can't love this film because one big part of it didn't work.
But
prove us wrong, Coens.
Yeah, it's funny, though, because they did a section in Parish of Thames, didn't they?
Yeah, they did.
Possibly the best section in Parish
of
Thames.
I haven't seen that. I should check that out.
That was
they do.
You remember that scene?
I think so.
Parish Metro.
Yes.
With Buscemi, and he's playing with the image of Mona Lisa. It's really funny.
You feel like the Coens are kind of built for, like, short narrative things. They'd be great at things like commercials and kind of short films before other features, but they don't do them like as often as they should. But you feel like they'd be great at it because I loved Hail Caesar. I loved the kind of chopped up narrative sketchy part of that. So it should be exciting, this one.
One of my top picks was a film that was added quite late to the festival, and that's Brady Corbett's Vox Lux, looks really weird. And it's got Natalie Portman, and you see her, this woman, like, rise to becoming a huge pop star. I don't know much else about the plot, but I'm really intrigued by it. I think Brady Corbett really had an incredible debut with Childhood of a Leader. And I'm really interested in Natalie Portman's career as well at the moment. So after Black Swan, after Jackie, you know, she's managed to kind of... She sort of dropped out of the third Thor film because I think she was kind of like, I'm done with... doing stuff that I need to do now. I can just only do things that I want. And apparently she gives a really weird performance in this, which I'm really looking forward to seeing. And it looks like she's kind of back to Black Swan mode in a way.
It does kind of. It's got that element to it.
Yeah.
It's unhinged.
Set just before 2000. I think it's going to be an interesting one. And also intriguing to see it sort of side by side to Star is Born. And sort of the different takes on that. Yeah.
Who is her character in Vox Lux based on anyone, or is it just a unique kind of character?
I'm not sure. I think it's just a unique. It's probably based on various different artists.
I feel like if you say pop star 1999, Britney Spears.
There's a touch of Gaga about.
For sure. Looking at the pictures
and
absolutely.
Bowie as well.
I actually thought it was
hybrid.
Taking place in the 70s because of the way she looked.
Yeah.
But it's the late 90s.
Yeah.
Isn't it?
So. We've also got Jude Law's in it, Christopher Abbott, Willem Dafoe, Jennifer L. So it's a good cast. I'm just really intrigued with what they do with this kind of much trod ground of seeing a pop star's rise to fame.
Yeah, absolutely.
Another film I'm really looking forward to is Birds of Passage, which I may have already seen. So this is Ciro Guerra's follow-up to Embrace of the Serpent, and this is a completely different film to that. This time he's co-directed with Cristina Gallego, and it's a kind of Goodfellas, Godfather-y gangster film, essentially, but set in this community in Colombia, which I had no idea existed. And so you've got this kind of, it's told in like five chapters. It spans like 15 years?
Yeah, it's maybe over a decade, isn't
about
it?
About a decade, yeah.
About a decade or so, yeah.
So it's got this kind of epic gangster narrative, but set against the backdrop of this community, where you have to slowly learn what the rules are of this community and what their beliefs are and their traditions, and how the kind of the guns and the cocaine and this kind of aspect of what we know of like sort of Colombian drug culture intersects with this more traditional, almost called more tribal kind of aspect. And it's really interesting to see how those things connect. It looks incredible. It's really, really colourful. Because Embrace the Serpent was... Is it all black and white, Embrace the Serpent?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, as far as I remember.
Does the hallucination tips into colour, I think.
So, but here he's gone full colour, full Technicolour, and it looks glorious. Incredible performances, and really, really accessible as well, because it's a narrative that you'll kind of know and trust and are willing to go along with without having to work too hard. But you're also, you know, having thrown all this new cultural stuff at you, and it gels really well together.
I mean, it wouldn't be a Curzon podcast without showing some love to Mia Hansen Love.
Yeah, of course.
Whose Things to Come was released by Artificial Eye 2 years ago, I think. Yeah. Isabelle Huppert was a really terrific film, a bit of a grower, to be honest. I don't know if I really loved it the first time I saw it, but absolutely mad about it now. And she has a new film called Maya, which is described as a road movie through India, where you're following a journalist who is suffering from post-traumatic stress syndrome from something that he witnessed during his work. And I don't know that I need to know much more than that. It's Mia Hansen Love. It's going to be quite an intellectual pursuit. It's going to be thoughtful. It's going to be gentle. Mm. And it's going to be everything that we know and love about her.
Mm. Yeah, I look forward to that. Yeah. I'm also looking forward to Ben Wheatley's new film, Happy New Year, Colin Bursted.
Oh, yeah.
When this film was first announced, like 9 months ago, it was titled Colin Uranus.
I've seen people calling it Happy New Year, Colin, You Bursted as well.
I don't know what this film's called. Yeah. I think people at the time thought this was going to be a Ben Wheatley take on Coriolanus, Colin Uranus. And right, I think he said, yeah, it still kind of is that a bit. But it seems like he's going back to his down terrace roots, where it's a bunch of people that meet for New Year's in this big country manor, and things take a Ben Wheatley-esque turn. So it's got the guy from Kill List, and his name, Charles Dance, is in it as well.
Oh, I saw Charles Dance was in it. That's a draw. he's having a really interesting
Neil Maskell.
Career. Oh, yeah.
And Hayley Squires from I, Daniel Blake is also in it as well. So it's got a really interesting cast. And again, with kind of what you said about Mia Hansen Love, I don't need to know anymore. Yeah. I'm just happy to see a weird Ben Wheatley film. I'm sure he's going to do something really strange and really interesting.
It's a world premiere, I think, at the
it
festival,
is, yeah.
too.
Oh,
cool.
No one's seen it yet, so it's really exciting as well. Ben Wheatley's kind of a staple of the London Film Festival at this point, I think.
Yeah, he is. Yeah.
He's been, I think, High Rise and Free Fire were both...
I saw both of those.
I love Free Fire so much.
I really dislike Free Fire.
I loved it.
I thought it was, it was bad.
But I think I also love it because I'm biased to Sholto Copley's character in that film, because I totally get him. He's a very, very particular type of South African. That is, and it, he nailed it. It was hilarious. I love that film.
We'll talk about this later.
Okay, fine.
I thought it'd be interesting as well to give a shout out to Dogman.
Oh, yeah.
Which is really interesting, because it's actually being screened UK-wide.
Yeah, it's out in 2 weeks.
Yeah, on the day of the festival, which is a really nice platform for it, I think.
Yeah.
It's a really, visually, it's a really
gorgeous
movie. Mm. And the setting that it takes place in is
super
stunning.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's stunning. The lead performance in it as well is just something to behold.
He won Best Actor at
Cannes. Yeah.
He's phenomenal.
He is unbelievably good.
Marcello Fonte.
Yeah.
And I remember reading somewhere that he came from a kind of very kind of poor background too, and kind of worked his way up into this kind of role, which is really excellent to see. He was very overwhelmed with emotion when he won his award, and you can see in this film that he's really putting everything into it.
He's got one of those cinematic faces.
Yeah,
just
thinking
want
of his face,
yeah.
I was just smiling.
Yeah.
He's got this like, oh, it's so emotive.
He's like a Buscemi face.
Lots of
layers. Yeah. You just want to. So interesting. He's great.
I hope he makes a career from this because I think he's got a lot to give. Actually.
I want to see him again.
Yeah.
Did anyone? We're talking about some of the big gala films. We've been mainly talking about the relatively slightly smaller stuff, but you've got big stuff like Widows is happening, The Favourite's coming out, Suspiria's finally getting a UK.
Very excited.
Cannot wait.
Yeah, I mean, only because I feel like I might hate it.
Yeah,
That's exciting to me. Because I've really tried to stay away from all the reviews for that one because I didn't want it to be tainted. But I hear it's very, very different from the original, which I love, which isn't a bad thing. I think it's good to go in a different direction. I'm not the biggest fan of Guadagnino, but this is, I think, a really interesting movie for him to take on.
Almost double the length of the first Suspiria.
Awesome. I mean, Matilda.
Matilda. Yeah.
I can always do with that. But as far as the galas go, there's some really big hitters this year. Favourite's going to be great, I think.
Yeah.
I hear it's his most accessible film.
Yeah, and I'm actually also really looking forward to Barry Jenkins' new film.
Oh,
Beale Street Could Talk.
I feel like that's going. It's Moonlight all over again. I feel like this is going under the radar.
Yeah.
People are like, oh, they're getting distracted by a lot of these kind of big films. Then there's this quiet film that Barry Jenkins is working on.
Mm.
And you watch the trailer and you think, Jesus Christ, this looks incredible.
Yeah.
The trailer is something else.
Yeah.
Isn't it?
Yeah. The trailer's like a short film in itself. Yeah.
Unbelievable. Mm. And I just think it could end up just taking everything again. Like, looking at it, it's just, it seems to be a really powerful film. Really powerful.
He's just such a good director.
Yeah. I recently went to see The Old Man and the Gun.
Oh, great.
Oh, you saw it already. In competition.
Yeah.
And it's really, really lovely film.
Okay.
It's such a charming, not an entirely nostalgia throwback film.
Yeah.
It's more than that. But Robert Redford's eyes, I mean, they're captivating. You get lost in those blues, you know?
Yeah.
Sissy Spacek is... Yeah.
Those baby blues.
Sissy Spacek is amazing in it. It's just a really comforting film. The likes, the old like Hitchcocks, perhaps a little bit, but really it's like new Hollywood era, and it's really, really warm, and it's got a touch of melancholy about it. It's definitely like this is Robert Redford's swan song, although he's backtracked on that one.
Yeah,
it's not anymore, but you know, it signs off in that kind of way. And I think that this will be a really fun watch for a lot of people. It's not just people who remember Robert Redford at all. It's just fun anyway.
Such an interesting director, David Lowery. I really don't know which way his career is going right now.
You loved Ghost Story, didn't you?
I love Ghost Story. I like Pete's Dragon too. But I mean, that's an animated like DreamWorks film, and then this is like a classic Hollywood throwback. Like, trying to figure out where he's going. But it's exciting.
Yeah,
and I'm really glad to hear that it's such a kind of affecting film, and it's not just an empty kind of nostalgia trip.
I was sat there with a smile on my face the entire
time.
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
And we've also got Peterloo as well, which is going to be the first film at the London Film Festival not playing in London.
No, it's Manchester, right?
It's Manchester, yeah.
I mean, good. It's a good thing. I mean,
it makes sense.
It does. I mean, I get that I think it's great that the film... we speak about this in the interview, actually, that they're kind of branching out to other kind of regions of the UK. But obviously, you can't... It's still got to be in London, else it's not the London Film Festival.
Yeah.
So, you know. it is great. It is great news. And I think Peterloo's going to be a very engaging film, especially for people interested in that subject.
Yeah,
definitely. Does anyone have any last little festival preview highlights they want to throw at us before we wrap up?
Just we talk about this very briefly in the interview, but if anyone does have the time, Mario Yelenas's 15-hour epic La Flor is worth, I'm sure it'll be worth checking out because his other films are incredible. But you know, it's shown in three parts at the ICA and then at the BFI South Bank. At least check out the first part. first half an hour. See if you want to stay in for 15. You know, I think it's going to be great.
Great. We'll look forward to that one. 15-hour film. thank you, everyone. And so the London Film Festival is playing from the 10th of October to the 21st. You can get tickets online through the BFI as well. You can get some last-minute tickets from the ticket office in Leicester Square.
Can I add one little thing the film festival? I'm going to be basing myself at Mayfair and Curzon Soho to participating venues. I will be with a clipboard in hand, and if any of our listeners want to come and tell me what they think of the films they see, I would love to hear from you. We're going to try and speak to as many people as we can and just find out who's watching what, how they feel about things.
Yeah.
So come and make yourself known.
Great. So that's at Curzon Mayfair and Soho. Curzon Soho.
Yeah.
And you'll be there.
I'll be splitting myself between the two across the whole festival.
Okay, so look for a tall man with a clipboard.
That's the one.
Great. A striped shirt.
And a striped shirt. You always wear a
striped shirt. Now you have to wear the whole festival.
All right, well, goodbye from Ryan.
Goodbye.
Goodbye from Stephen.
Goodbye.
Goodbye from Kelly.
Bye.
And goodbye from me. Thank you very much for listening. We'll see you next week.